Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to what is becoming the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who, like me, have come to realize that there's something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, about the forces that are at play within our society. Religious and political institutions, the media in their reporting, military invasions, and counterproductive economic schemes. We realize that these institutions are actually causing the problems that we are enduring, and therefore they are not the solution. So instead of merely presenting the news, our mission on this program is to understand these tragedies. Who's causing them? Why? What will the consequence be? All while predicting how these events will influence our world. Now, typically in our second hour, today in our first, because today we will be joined in our second hour by IQ Al-Rasouli. We're going to talk about the conflict in Syria. We're going to engage here now in our first hour, God on his terms. That's not through religion. He hates religion. It's not through faith. Faith is useless. It is through evidence and reason. And today, since at sundown, beginning on Sunday and through Monday to sundown, will be the celebration of Yom Kippurim. We're going to focus our attention on this, the sixth of seven invitations to meet with God. His Torah instructions, and particularly his covenant, of which these seven instructions to meet with God are part of, provide the only reliable source of hope in a rapidly disintegrating world. Now, if you'd like to participate in this program at any time over the next 2 hours, our toll-free number is 877-300-7645. So, as promised, we are approaching the Day of Reconciliations. I thought we'd devote today's program and also the second hour of Monday's program to reconciliations, and that it will be the celebration of this grand event will begin this Sunday at sunset and run through Monday. It is the 10th day of the 7th month. We celebrated the Mikre of Teruah, which means to shout out a warning and to provide the news regarding the path that God has provided on Friday, a week ago. That was the first day of the 7th month. Today, Sunday at sundown will be the 10th. Now, the purpose of the 6th invitation to be called out and to meet with God is defined by its name, as is the case with all 7 of his invitations to meet with him. That's why it's important not only to communicate their name in Hebrew, but to explain their name in English. You know, Pesach means to pass over. What were they being passed over? Passing over death. Passing over the realization that we're mortal, but that God has provided a doorway to life. Matzah. It means bread without yeast. Yeast is defined as religious and political sin. It is a fungus that infects everything. Removing it perfects us. The third of these Moed Mikre, these meetings to be called out and to be welcomed into God's presence, is Bakurim. It means firstborn children. It is symbolic of our adoption into our Heavenly Father's covenant family. This is followed, as it should be, by the promise of the Shabbat of 7 sevens called Shavuah, where the covenant's children are enriched with their Heavenly Father's teaching and empowered by his set-apart spirit so that we grow, so that we live more productive, more effective, more useful lives. The fourth invitation thereby equips us for the 5th, which is Teruah, which we just explained and we celebrated a week ago. Well, actually last Friday. It is a celebration of our opportunity that all of those things provide, the children of the covenant, to be able to share Yahweh's Torah guidance, particularly regarding his invitations to meet with him and the requirements associated with the covenant, with everyone who is interested in listening. If you're interested in hope, if you are recognizing that, you know, I ought not be depending on my government, that my military really hasn't been used to protect my freedom, maybe ever, but certainly it isn't now. If you have come to realize that being dependent on the government is putting the whole country in a position that the government is destined to fail, it's destined to collapse, it's bankrupt. If you come to realize that, you know, my religion is just, there's so much of it that's phony. You know, the pastors are having affairs with other men's wives and their congregations, that the pastors are all too often greedy and mostly interested in money. If you come to realize that, you know, what is this with the Sunday worship thing? Why does God want to be worshipped? Isn't that pretty stupid? I mean, wouldn't that make God unbelievably insecure to create a being for the purpose of worshiping him? What kind of a God? You wouldn't want to know a God like that. Why Sunday when he talks about the Shabbat being an eternal instruction? Why Christmas when it's a Babylonian religious holiday? It has nothing to do with anything in God's word. Why Easter when it is blatantly a pagan Babylonian holiday, when there's no correlation between it and anything that God's had to tell us? Why a Trinity when Yahweh says, I am one? Why Jesus Christ when there was no one named Jesus Christ? Christ is not a last name, and Jesus isn't even close to what his name was. Why would you trust a religion when they replace God's actual name, Yahweh, 7,000 times with Satan's title, Lord? I mean, hopefully you're to the point where you're beginning to realize that not only is your political party unreliable, not only is patriotism misdefined loyalty, inappropriate, counterproductive, but that your religion is wholly inappropriate as well, founded on a pile of lies. And if you're beginning to emerge from that place, then God has good news for you. His testimony is easy to understand. His nature is easy to understand. His plan and purpose are easy to understand if you're willing to invest the time and knowing him, and if you have an open mind, if you're willing to question and then walk away from your political and patriotic and religious entanglements. Well, the purpose of this day, it's called Yom Kippurim. It's the day of reconciliations. Kippur means to reconcile in Hebrew. And Kippurim, therefore, is reconciliations. It is the sixth of seven steps that we walk to God. The seventh is actually not a step, it's the destination. It's sukkah, it means shelters, it signifies camping out with God. It is invocative of our return to Eden, to the protective enclosure of great joy, of living with God in his home, which is now the universe. And so those are the seven steps, with Yom Kippurim being the one that we will celebrate here on Sunday at sundown. For those of you who think those are Jewish holidays, you would have been lied to. It's another reason that you ought not trust your religious advisor. And if you look up in the Catholic Encyclopedia and you look up Yom Kippur, you will find that it is a Jewish holiday. It's not true. God never, ever calls it a Jewish holiday. Ever. All seven of these invitations to meet with him are his. They are Yahweh's. They are God's. He is offering to meet with us on these days. And he tells those of us who are, those of you, I should say, who are, for whatever reason, because you've been beguiled by Paul, who told you not to pay any attention to the Torah. You've been beguiled by some preacher or pastor or priest, and you have been beguiled into believing that these days are Jewish and they have nothing to do with you since you're not Jewish. Whatever the reason might be, maybe you're anti-Semitic. Maybe you're agnostic and think that the secular humanist teaching that the God of the, quote, Old Testament, and there is no Old Testament, is mean-spirited, and therefore you won't want anything to do with him because he's not politically correct. Whatever the reason might be, maybe you just don't care. But if you don't attend these meetings, God makes it absolutely, unequivocally clear. You will be estranged from his family, and your soul will cease to exist. So, enjoy your life, because it's the only one you're going to get. That's it. The end of your life. Your soul will vanish. Doesn't go to heaven, doesn't go to hell, just ceases to exist. You squandered your opportunity. So these days are really important. Now, I want to make absolutely clear something that we've said on this program many times before, because God makes it clear. This path to God is for the covenant's children. If you haven't first considered the covenant, come to understand what is being offered, come to know the God who is offering you this covenant relationship, and then embraced its terms and conditions, then these seven steps will do you no good. These seven steps are for the covenant's children, and so once you have come to embrace those terms and conditions, then you're in a position to walk to him and become perfect along the path that he has provided. And we've said the sixth and final step towards the ultimate destination is Yom Kippurim, the day we will discuss in a moment. When one considers, when one connects, when one contemplates the words of the prophets, the words that Yahweh revealed through his prophets, it does become abundantly clear that Yahweh will return to protect his family on Yom Kippurim. It's the day that he will not only reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and Yehudah, but also between them and him, and between them as well. What I mean by that is that there was a rift during Solomon's time between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. The southern kingdom was comprised of Yehudah and of Benjamin. The northern kingdom was all of the remaining tribes. And that rift persisted through the Assyrian invasion, which came shortly thereafter, where the Assyrians hauled away virtually all of the tribes of the northern kingdom, where it became impossible, really, for anyone to identify themselves with a particular tribe from that point on. And in the southern kingdom, Yahweh had work to do with them, and fortunately, during this time, Hezekiah came up, read a copy of the Torah, which hadn't been read in many years, and decided that it was appropriate for Yehudah to destroy all vestiges of religion, the Babylonian religion, the Canaanite religion, the Hittite religion, and did, and began to celebrate these mikre, beginning with Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim. And even though he didn't celebrate them on the right day, he got a special dispensation from Yahweh to be a couple of weeks late. And they enjoyed the celebration so much, they asked Yahweh, say, hey, can we continue this another week? This was really fun. And God said, sure. Which is telling us that we ought not be quibbling over what day, you know, whether or not you choose to celebrate Yom Kippurim, beginning at Saturday at sundown, or Sunday at sundown, or Monday at sundown, is really less important than recognizing what the day represents and celebrating it enthusiastically based upon what Yahweh has done and is offering to us. Well, on this particular day, he is returning. If you want to know the day that that God is going to return, he told us, it is Yom Kippur. He has also told us what year he's going to return, which is year 6000 Yah. And so you can look back through the calendar in terms of the fact that 6000 years ago, minus about 20 years, in fact, exactly 6000 years minus 20 years ago, Adam and Chawa were expelled from the garden from having chosen to ignore, convolute Yahweh's instructions. 1,000 years after that, we have the flood, and we have evidence of it, and we will talk about that on this program, about the comet asteroid that hit our planet, and the welling up of seawater that caused the flood up through Mesopotamia all the way up to the Black Sea. 1,000 years after that is when Yahweh invited Abraham to leave Babylon, to leave the most religious and political place on earth, most militaristic place on earth, and to walk to him, to his home in the Promised Land. And during that walk and during their discussions, Yahweh delineated the terms and conditions of the covenant, which there are five, and the benefits of the covenant, which there are five. It's interesting, there are five hands in Yahweh's name. Now, as a result of that occurring, where the covenant was finally affirmed with Yahweh and Abraham on Mount Moriah, that was year 1968 BCE. 1,000 years later, 968 BCE, Dod prepares the cornerstone, which Solomon lays for Yahweh's temple, his home in Jerusalem, on exactly that same mount, Mount Moriah. 1,000 years later, in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE on our pagan calendars, Yahweh, in a corporeal and diminished form, walks into Jerusalem to be the perfect Passover lamb, to have his soul fulfill all of the promises of matzah, taking the fungus of religious and political sin away from us, so that we could be firstborn children born into the covenant family. And after fulfilling those wonderful meetings to be welcomed into God's company, seven Sabbaths later, the set-apart spirit enriched and empowered the covenant's children. That occurred in 33 CE. So it's 2033, will be year 6000 Yah. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about Yom Kippurim. It's the day of reconciliations. It is the day that Yahweh is going to return. It isn't difficult to know the day. God tells us what day he is going to return. He tells us what he's going to accomplish on this specific day. And his return is specifically for the purpose of reconciling not only the relationship between Yahudah and Yisrael, but even more importantly, their relationship with him. And there is a slight difference between Yahudah and Yisrael, and that Yahudah is one of the 12 tribes. It also represents the southern kingdom, and Yisrael is the remaining and represents what was the northern kingdom. He is going to therefore totally reunite Yisrael, but more importantly, he is going to reconcile his relationship with them. Now, he's not doing it because they're swell. He's doing it because he made a promise. When God makes a promise, he keeps them. He made a promise to Abraham, to Yishak after Abraham, and to Jacob after Yishak, that he would reconcile his relationship, his covenant relationship with their descendants. He explained that they would go wayward, and they did. That they would break their covenant, and they did. And unfortunately, he predicted that they would become religious, and they did. But there will be a time when they finally come to realize that their religion has led them astray, and they will look at the very God that they pierced and recognize him as an individual and look up to him and welcome him into their lives by name. Hello, Larry. I know that you're listening here. This is this particular McRae is one of your very favorite, in that it designates so clearly the time that Yahweh is returning. I have Larry locked in, but for some reason we're not able to hear him.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Yeah, it sounds like a one of those commercials. Can you hear me now? I can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, in Zechariah, it says, so they will look upon me by whom association they pierced, mourning as one wails for an only begotten son, grieving bitterly over him as one who suffers anguish over a firstborn. That's Zechariah 12:10. And it shall come to exist in the whole land, prophetically predicts Yahweh. Two-thirds will be cut off and die. One-third will be spared. That's 13:8. And then when we go right to 13:9, he says, I will return and harvest this one-third in the fire. I will refine them as one refines silver, test them as one does gold. They will summon my personal and proper name, which is Yahweh, and I will answer them. Mm-hmm. That's Zechariah 13:9. And here we see the exact moment that the families reconciled in Zechariah 13:9 at the end of it. I will say, you are my people, and they will profess Yahweh is our mighty one. And that's Zechariah 13:9. So out of the Holocaust, Israel is stored, and out of the ashes of the Battle of Megiddoim, the Yehudim will be united with their God.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things.
Point of reconciliations, which is what Kippurim means.
Yeah, there are three essential points here. One is that this is all going to occur on God's timeline on the day of reconciliations. And therefore, if you're not celebrating God's calendar, if you're not answering his invitations to meet with him on these days, then you will be estranged from his family. So, he told us what day he's going to return at Yom Kippurim, and therefore, if you are not celebrating this day because you're a Christian and you've been led to believe that this is a Jewish holiday, sayonara. You will be, your soul is going to cease to exist. You will not be invited into heaven. Second, it's Yahweh who is returning. Yahusha is the corporeal manifestation of Yahweh. He's not all of Yahweh. He is a diminished aspect of Yahweh. When Yahweh, who is energy, spirit is energy, chooses to manifest part of his energy as matter, he has to diminish that aspect of himself. He doesn't diminish the totality of himself, just takes some of his energy, manifests it as matter. It's the reason that if you understand relativity, you can understand what happened here, and it's essential, because if you're a Christian and you're looking to Jesus, not only don't you know his name, but your focus is in the wrong place. It is Yahweh who you should be looking at, and what the relationship between energy and matter is so essential. Matter is nothing more than organized energy, but it's energy in a diminished form. That is why E equals MC squared. You have to multiply mass by the square of the speed of light to be equivalent to energy. Therefore, mass is a corporeal form is a hugely diminished manifestation of energy. Therefore, God being spirit, energy, for him to take material form as he did through Yahusha, that is a hugely diminished aspect of Yahweh's nature. And so, for this whole religion,
he says Yahusha is, doesn't he?
Right.
He says he's a diminished part of me. He's
right.
A part of me that's been diminished.
Right.
So he's Kodesh, Kodesh. Set apart. Set apart from what? Well, from Yahweh.
Right. So, and when you understand Yahusha, the name, what you realize is it's really not a name. God only has one name. His name is Yahweh. Yahusha means is a combination of Yahweh and the Hebrew word for salvation, Yasha. And so, Yahusha means Yahweh saves. That tells you who he is and what he's doing. And so it is in this statement, and this is the second lesson to learn. It is that Yahweh is returning. Now, what that also means is that when he returns, he is not returning nearly as diminished as he would have to be through a corporeal manifestation. He's not coming back corporeally. He's coming back as energy, as light, in his more natural state. That's the reason Yahusha, during the Olivet Discourse, specifically said, when I come back, I'm going to look like a constellation of stars. Light. Now, that's the second aspect of this statement that is profound and is wholly disingenuous with the Christian religion.
You know, can I interject something here, Yada?
Sure.
Also in Zechariah, when he's describing this, he makes an astonishing statement. He says that there will be no diminishment of his light on that day. And then as he's returning, we see all those attacking Jerusalem in accordance with their king, Allah, says, they will be melted. Their eyeballs will literally melt into their sockets, and their tongues will dissolve in their mouth. And so what we see is anybody that's not covered by the Kodesh Ruach at that point is simply melted.
And the reason that Yahweh could not come to our planet undiminished and with his light and even in any of his previous six visits is that his light would literally melt us. It would be as if a million nuclear bombs went off. We would be turned to we'd be evaporated. And so
this is all too much science when we're supposed to be in religion.
I know, God's testimony is precisely accurate scientifically, and you can actually understand what's going to happen if you're aware of the relationship between energy, and light is a pure form of energy, and matter. And in the presence of that much energy, light, those who are not enveloped in Yahweh's garment of light, which is provided by the Ruach Kodesh, set apart spirit, will instantly be vaporized. The reason here, by the way, is that God's not going to tolerate religion or politics or militarism in his presence. These people that are being vaporized all have chosen to embrace religion or politics as their answer. They've signed up for economic schemes of man. And as a result, when he returns, they're vaporized. And that is because God's going to set up his home here on earth, and only his children are going to live there with him, and they are protected.
And his children are who? They're from all different races, all different places. They're the people who decided to take Yahweh's word seriously, aren't they?
Yes, with one exception. And while that's what you said is all true, on this particular day, and this is the third point that I want to make certain that our Christian friends hear. On this day, is he coming back for Goyim?
No.
Does he say on this day that I'm going to reconcile my relationship with Gentiles?
Nope.
Does he say on this day I'm going to reconcile my relationship with Christians?
No.
In fact, is there a word even remotely related to Christian anywhere in Yahweh's testimony?
No.
How about church? How about church?
No, there's things like church that are discussed, and they're called an abomination.
Yeah, well, that's true because they're religious. Now, that being the case, When, in fact, I read, and I will share in a future program, there's from WorldNet Daily, Joseph Farrow is a Christian, and therefore there's a lot of what WorldNet Daily puts out that is absolute rubbish. And he was touting the fact that surveys today show that 40% of Christians think that they're living in the end times. Well, we are living in the end times. They just don't know why. And nor do they know that they're excluded from the good part and will participate in the bad part. But the one of the things that is just so troubling about Christianity is that they think that their Jesus Christ is coming back for them, when it's, in fact, it's them that are going to be part of those who are annihilated. And
it's back for you, sir.
That's exactly right. He is really clear about this. Which means that there is a 0% possibility that Christians replaced Yisrael and Yehuda as replacement theology portends. He is coming back. He says it unequivocally for Yisrael and Yehuda, and to reconcile his relationship with them. And then he also, in this same statement, as it's presented the same day as it's presented in Yirmiyahu, tells us that the very thing he's going to do on this day with Yehuda and Yisrael is write his Torah inside of them. Can't be a New Testament under those circumstances, my friends. Here's Chad Remus. I'm your host. Together we have Larry on the phone with us. There are three profound lessons that we can learn from this day, from Yom Kippurim, particularly in year 6000 Yah, which will be 2033 on our pagan calendars, 20 years from now, when Yahweh returns on this day, on Yom Kippurim. One is that God keeps his schedule, and his schedule is based upon these seven invitations to meet with us. If you are not participating in them because you've been beguiled by your religion to think that they are Jewish holidays, you would be wrong. You will be estranged from God. Your soul will cease to exist. Second is that it is Yahweh who is returning. We can learn a great deal about the nature of Yahweh and the fact that Yahusha is a mission statement. It tells us that God diminished an aspect of himself, set apart an aspect of himself to reveal himself to us and also to fulfill his promises, specifically as they relate to these seven mikrei. He has fulfilled the first four. Over the next 20 years on Teruah, he will fulfill the fifth, and in year 6000 Yah, 2033, on our calendars, which will be at sunset, 6:22 p.m. in Jerusalem, on October 2nd, he will return.
Yada.
Now, yes.
Can I add something here? There's a mizmor, or a song, we call that a psalm, or many do today.
Right.
It's the 119th, 1-3, says this. He said, blessed, enjoyable, and favorable is the way to becoming innocent, perfect, and entirely blameless by walking in the Torah of Yahweh. Properly guided are those who are saved and preserved by his testimony. They genuinely seek to have a relationship with him and his witness for all time. Therefore, they do not carry out that which is harmful or wrong, and they do so by walking in his ways. Now, but what are his ways? His ways are, his walk is the seventh day of rest, and it's the seven Moed Mikra. That's the walk, isn't it?
Right, it is. And it's presented, in the Torah.
He doesn't expect us to be raising the dead, does he? He doesn't expect us to do the work. He does all the work. We simply follow his path that he blazed. We have no work to do.
Yeah, it's amazing that the Christians writing books that are stunningly popular about us being in the end days, end times, will cite, they'll say, the Old Testament. Now, there is no Old Testament. There's the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms. That is the entire testament of Yahweh. It's not old. It's just the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And it doesn't have a it was in the past. It's written in Hebrew, which is an eternal language, not second time. And when Yahweh returns to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and with Yehuda, he tells us in Yirmiyah, which means Yahweh lifts up, that he the reaffirmation of his covenant with them, the restoration of his covenant relationship with them, will be based entirely on his Torah, and he's going to write a copy of his Torah inside of us, placing it inside of us. Now, if he is going to do that, in which you just read from the 119th Mizmor Psalm, which is the ultimate celebration of the Torah, saying that, you know, salvation is for those who walk in the Torah. And that being the case, it is absolutely impossible that Paul was right when he declared a new and different covenant based upon belief in the gospel of grace and the repudiation of the Torah.
And therefore, grace, who? Who was grace?
That's the cute little nude girls that were the goddess of lasciviousness in the Roman and the Greek religion. They were called the Charites in Greece. They were the Gratia in Rome. They were pagan
underworld goddesses, weren't they?
Bluesy
and mystery.
Yeah, well, they really were the goddesses of merriment. If you wanted to have a libertine experience, you would celebrate it with the naked goddesses of the Gratia Charis. That's who Paul chose to be the basis of his new faith. It is essential that you come to realize that there is a 0% possibility that Christianity is right, because it claims to be the inspired word of the very God whose words we are considering and whose words are the antithesis of Christianity. If you're informed and rational, you can't be a Christian. And that is an extraordinarily important thing for you to think about on this day, the celebration of Yom Kippur. I am Yada. This is Shattering Mist. We'll be back in a moment.